UN Special Rapporteur visiting Iran denounces U.S. sanctions against Tehran as unjustified, calling on Washington to immediately remove them. Turkey accuses Sweden and Finland of harboring terrorist organizations and threatens to block their bids for NATO membership. Also coming up, Britain warns it's experiencing a very, very difficult economic situation after official data puts the inflation rate at its highest since the late 80s. Thanks for joining us. The U.S. Special Rapporteur has described U.S. sanctions on Iran as unjustifiable and inhumane, urging Washington to immediately remove them. Elena Duhan, in a press briefing during her visit to Tehran, highlighted the negative impact of unilateral coercive U.S. measures. She said the sanctions have endangered the humanitarian situation and people's livelihood in Iran, while further affecting the vulnerable strata of the society. The U.N. official added that the sanctions have also hampered Iran's efforts to import life-saving medicines due to restrictions on banking transactions. Finland and Sweden formally submit the request to join the NATO alliance, a move that is likely to draw a response from Russia. The NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg has welcomed the bids for membership, describing it as a historic moment. The decisions, triggered by Russia's military operation in Ukraine, have earlier drawn Moscow's reaction. Russia has warned Finland that the decision would seriously damage bilateral ties and security in northern Europe. Moscow has also warned of deployment of nuclear weapons and hypersonic missiles. Meanwhile, the bids for membership in the U.S.-led alliance are drawing Turkey's opposition, with Ankara threatened to block the requests. The Turkish president has accused both countries of harboring terrorist organizations. While the conflict in Ukraine continues, a correspondent in Donetsk traveled to the Petrovsky district near the front line to investigate the shelling of Donbass civilians by the Ukrainian army.
Petrovsky, a district of Donetsk. The front line is only a few kilometers away. The Ukrainian army has been shelling the district since 2014, and since the war with Russia began, the shelling has intensified. A school. Two shells landed yesterday in the playground.
Yesterday in the morning, approximately from 8 until 9, two missiles hit here, from either Novomikhailovka or Krasnogorovka. You could hear some whistling and two explosions. One hit the big tree over there, another hit over here. And 18 windows in the school were damaged.
The janitor cleans up the glass from the shattered windows to the sound of outgoing artillery fired by the Donbass separatists.
The janitor at that school told us that another school had been hit just a few hours ago in Petrovsky, so we're going there now to see what damage has been done.
A branch blown off and shattered glass. It is fortunate the children here are currently learning from home.
I found some shrapnel, deadly pieces of shrapnel that will kill or injure anybody nearby. And it's strange here seeing people still walking about and looking out their windows. At any time, one of these missiles could hit them.
Another recent strike on an apartment building. Two people were confirmed killed. 20 meters away, children play. Since 2014, over 100 children have been killed by Ukrainian shelling and over 14,000 people in total. We hear of more shelling today on some houses.
No, my house was hit on 3rd of May. Not today. Not directly my house, but my fence was damaged by shrapnel. Today house number 30 was hit. Let's go.
A few houses along, another fence destroyed.
What happened? The shooting started and we couldn't understand where it was from. Then we heard a rustling sound. It was above our heads. It hit once, twice, the third, then the fourth hit here. I saw the smoke and thought there was a fire.
While thousands of people have left Petrovsky, many, like Yulia, prefer to stay. They have nowhere else to go and prefer living under shelling than becoming refugees.
What can I say? It happens often. There are many places hit, not only here, but near the roundabout, the big supermarkets, and people die every day. When will it end?
So, why do you not leave here?
Where should we go? It's our earth, our ground, our houses are here. Why should we go anywhere? We didn't go to shoot at anyone. We have always been here. For what reason they shoot at us?
It's difficult to explain just how strange it is here in Petrovsky district. The people who are still here are leaving their lives in the hands of God or chance. Every day there are dozens of missile strikes here. While it's quiet at the moment, there's usually the constant rumble of incoming and outgoing artillery. While the vast majority of shelling in this war is being done by Russia, who currently have air and artillery superiority, the uncomfortable truth is that Ukraine is also killing civilians. Indeed, as it sees it, its own civilians. And they have been doing so for the last 8 years. Johnny Miller, Donetsk.
Our correspondent in Ukraine has interviewed residents in Kharkiv, a city under the Russian military siege for over 2 months. Let's take a listen.
We are residents of Kharkiv and live on its outskirts. The Russian forces, accompanied by tanks, entered the city from the other side. They continue their operations throughout the night, firing tank and artillery shells nonstop, targeting almost everything. We and everyone else are staying in bunkers. We thought it would finish in a day or two, but shelling continued uninterrupted. We can't leave our homes, and if we have to go out, we simply crawl. The Russian troops, however, do not harm civilians, but our phones, electricity, and the internet are all cut off. Those who are able and courageous try to shift their children to safety out of the town.
Moscow has expelled dozens of diplomats from France, Spain, and Italy, retaliation for a similar decision taken by the trio against Russia over its war in Ukraine. The Russian Foreign Ministry says 34 French diplomatic staffs have been declared persona non grata and have 2 weeks to leave the country. The ministry has also expelled 27 Spanish diplomats while announcing plans to 24 Italian staffers. The Italian Prime Minister has condemned the decision as a hostile act. Mario Draghi says diplomatic channels must not be interrupted. Last month, France, Spain, and Italy announced the expulsion of scores of Russian diplomats as part of a joint European action over the offensive in Ukraine. Russia has taken tit-for-tat measures against several Western countries since the launch of the war, which Moscow says is aimed at denazifying Ukraine. Meanwhile, Russia has accused Ukraine of being unwilling to continue peace talks to end hostilities as the war of words between the two grinds into its third month with no end in sight to the fighting. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov says peace talks are not moving forward due to a lack of will from Ukrainian negotiators. Russia's top negotiator has also said that he has yet to receive a response to a draft agreement that he sent to Ukraine in mid-April. This as Kyiv has already announced the suspension of negotiations, blaming Moscow for not making any compromises. The two sides have held several rounds of talks since February, but all ended without breakthroughs. There's no way of knowing how badly the conflict in Ukraine might damage the European Union's economy, experts tell an international conference in Brussels. Jerome Hughes reports from the Belgian capital.
Rising electricity, gas, oil, petrol, and food prices are drastically pushing the standard of living down for millions of citizens across the 27-nation EU. The European Commission's flagship annual conference focusing on the economy has been told things could get much worse.
In addition to the fact that the war could escalate, sanctions and counter-sanctions could create further problems, there is also the fact that in China, growth is slowing.
The Brussels Economic Forum 2022 also heard that financial pressures, mainly resulting from the conflict in Ukraine, are disproportionately impacting young adults in precarious jobs.
We're picking up incredible increases and disconcerting increases in anxiety, stress, depression, burnouts.
Some analysts suggest untold misery is being piled on citizens because the West purposely ignored Russia's legitimate security concerns. We have been seeking opinions on the current economic pressures.
A person who is employed, he can survive, but just think about a person who is not employed, how it is impacting him.
If we don't have also like kind of a push on the wages, we will not be able to cope with that, and our reserves, our savings, we will go down.
It will go until the point where people understand, okay, this is the peak, we cannot do anymore, and then let's see what's happened. I don't know.
Not only the energy, but the prices of food, the prices of transport. So everything is much more higher.
Driving the EU's foreign policy, critics say Washington has put the bloc in an unwinnable situation. There was no mention of that by key speakers at the Brussels conference.
Thanks to our unity, we have seen that swift and sweeping sanctions can have enormous force.
Enormous force for who? Russia's currency, the ruble, is doing very well, and the Federation is benefiting from rising energy prices. Experts warn of catastrophe if the Kremlin decides to cut off its gas supplies to the EU. As one contributor at the Brussels Economic Forum put it, there is no economy without energy. Jerome Hughes at the European Commission, Brussels.
UK inflation is soaring to levels unseen in more than 40 years. Consumer prices rose to 9% for the month of April. Millions of low- and middle-income families are directly impacted by the crisis as food and transport costs escalate. Also, the rising costs of gas and electricity have pushed household energy bills to record levels. Some Britons are now forced to turn off their heating, drive less, change supermarkets, or even skip meals to cut their expenses. The UK Foreign Secretary Liz Truss says the current economic situation is very, very difficult. The Bank of England expects that a further price rise will push the economy close to a recession by the end of 2022. It says that inflation may top 10% by December.
As they go about their day, millions of Britons are consumed with one big question: how to make ends meet in the year ahead as the impact of the cost of living crisis kicks in.
It brings a lot of frustration because we know that energy companies, like very recently BP and other companies, are posting the highest ever profits. So it almost feels really unfair. And definitely it's going to have an impact on some families.
I can't even save in. Now you've got to allocate that money for other places, you know, for feeding your family, your kids. Everything's gone up. Petrol's gone up. So houses now, you might have to put that in a back burner or wait a bit to until things better.
The cost of living crisis has barely begun, but the alarm bells are already ringing.
The numbers are pretty stark. Inflation is at a 30-year high. Thousands of people could face eviction as that inflation could feed through into the housing market. More than 5 million Britons already have to choose between food and heating, as the Bank of England Governor Andrew Bailey warns of apocalyptic food prices in the months ahead.
Not everyone is impacted. Bearing the brunt, low-income households, not only on their finances, but also on their health. The stress from soaring energy and food costs is preventing one in two people in Britain from looking after their well-being, with some even not affording to travel to hospital.
I can't sleep at night. Last night I woke up at 2 o'clock in the morning and I've been up since then because of these prices. It's just, you know... What can you do?
The culprit for all this, a cocktail of Brexit, the pandemic, and the Russian military conflict in Ukraine. Britain was one of the first countries banning Russian energy imports. The impact of that decision now felt by the people here.
The government really needs to look into this thoroughly, how they can help people out there to find a job. People that have lost their businesses along the line, they need to look into that as well, how to maybe they need to sustain them, provide funding.
The UK government says it's providing support worth over $24 billion within the next year to help families with the pressures from the increasing cost of living. The big question is, will it work? Saipur is up, London.
The Palestinian Embassy in Rome has opened the condolence book in remembrance of Palestinian journalist Shireen Abu Akla, who was killed by Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank city of Jenin last Wednesday. Several members of the Italian parliament signed the book and discussed the plan of action to set up an international investigation committee over her killing. Max Gemelli has more from the Italian capital.
The Palestine Embassy in Rome has placed in its premises a condolence book for people to express their grief and condemn the brutal killing of Palestinian veteran journalist Shirin Abu Akla. Shirin was covering the Israeli troops' raid in Jenin for Al Jazeera last Wednesday when she was shot in the head by Israeli forces. Her tragic death and the beating of Palestinian mourners during Shirin's funeral sent shockwaves across the region.
I know Shirin personally. My reaction was crying for hours. We felt really sorry, deeply inside. We felt sorry because we feel that we are alone. Where is the international community? Why they are staying silent for suffering of 14 million Palestinians?
On Tuesday, a number of Italian lawmakers went to visit the Palestinian ambassador to Rome to sign the condolence book for Shirin. The delegation of parliamentarians sat with the Palestinian diplomat to discuss how to get the Italian government involved in urging the international community to break its silence in regards with Israeli crimes.
We will file a parliamentary motion in which we demand the government to commit to set up an international investigation committee on what happened in Jenin and during the journalist's funeral.
The United Nations and the European Union, among others, have called for a full investigation into Shirin's assassination, described by many as a deliberate killing in cold blood. Problems have once again emerged in reporting the truth regarding the Israel-Palestine conflict. That comes as most mainstream media have provided a biased portrayal of the assassination of Shirin Abu Akla, omitting Israel's responsibility.
Unfortunately, it is a total double standard when it comes to Italian newspapers reporting on the Israel-Palestine conflict. When there are clashes in that region, journalists say Palestinians die while Israelis are killed.
Thousands of Palestinians residing in Italy have commemorated the Nakba through a number of small and large initiatives. They say the assassination of Shirin is one of the many ways Tel Aviv seeks to silence those that expose the apartheid regime. Max Civili, Press TV, Rome.
And with that, we come to an end for this edition of World News. It's bye-bye for now.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Limelight. Virus has laid bare America's fragmented healthcare system and corrosive racial and socioeconomic inequality. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Jessica Glenza, journalist. This article is published under the heading U.S. COVID deaths hit 1 million, a death toll higher than any other country. Stay tuned for more. More than 1 million people have died in the COVID-19 pandemic in the U.S., according to Johns Hopkins, far and away the most deaths of any country. While the sheer number of deaths from the coronavirus sets the U.S. apart, the country's large population of 332.5 million people does not explain the staggering mortality rate, which is among the highest in the world. For every 100,000 residents, 291 people have died from COVID-19, according to the Johns Hopkins University Coronavirus Resource Center. Among the 20 worst affected nations, only two other countries, including Brazil and Poland, have higher mortality rates per 100,000 people. Deaths directly attributable to COVID-19 are only one measure of the pandemic's toll. Deaths from drug overdoses hit a record high in 2021, killing at least 100,000 Americans. Chronic conditions such as heart disease, hypertension, and dementia have contributed to the number of excess deaths, a number which includes other ailments exacerbated by the pandemic, as well as those deaths caused directly by COVID-19. This number crossed the 1 million threshold in mid-February. The extraordinary toll has set the U.S. apart among wealthy peer nations, exposing inequality, a unique and fragmented health system, and polarized politics, all of which likely made the crisis worse, researchers said. In terms of understanding why we had such a bad experience from the pandemic, we have to think about the systematic issues that already were in place when the pandemic arrived, said Stephen Wolf, a social epidemiologist and population health researcher at Virginia Commonwealth University, adding, and on top of that, mishandling of the pandemic by the U.S. government and by the public, frankly. The pandemic shone a light on longstanding racial and ethnic health disparities as Black, Latino, and Native American people were infected, hospitalized, and died of COVID-19 at rates that were, at times, double those of white Americans. The drivers of those outcomes, the disproportionate likelihood for people of color to lack the same quality housing, employment, and healthcare access as white Americans, are well known and documented. Such disparities are the intended or unintended consequences of policy decisions, a recent commentary in the Journal of the American Medical Association said. The U.S. has nonetheless had difficulty correcting course. Vaccines were at first slow to reach minority, low-income, and rural areas. One recent study has shown how at least one advanced COVID-19 therapy, monoclonal antibodies, were the least likely to reach the highest-risk patients for whom they were recommended. It just exacerbated the struggles we currently have and pulled back the curtain on all the issues we've been dealing with for so many years, said Terrence Shirley, CEO of the Community Health Center Association of Mississippi. Community health centers help treat indigent and marginalized Americans who cannot pay for health care. The all-consuming nature of the pandemic has also allowed preventable and treatable infectious diseases to flourish, Thousands of young children, particularly in low-income households, have fallen behind on routine vaccinations. Rates of sexually transmitted diseases have reached the highest numbers in American history, as overwhelmed and underfunded local health agencies reallocated resources to COVID-19. Meanwhile, the mental health of adolescents in particular has suffered as millions were cut off from the mental health services provided by schools. Pediatricians, children's hospitals, and psychiatrists declared a mental health crisis among the nation's youth, and a recent CDC study has shown how emergency room visits for eating disorders has increased dramatically among adolescents, girls. Millions of children were also thrust into food insecurity as the numbers of children receiving school meals plummeted. Missed academic time appears to have caused the educational and achievement gap to widen. The U.S. has been experiencing worse health outcomes for some years now. Life expectancy in the U.S. is the lowest of any high-income country, said Wolf, adding, there is a set of reasons for it, but all of those rolled right into the pandemic. However, America's reliance on an expensive private and exclusionary healthcare system is not solely to blame. Although policies that exclude 28 million uninsured individuals from healthcare have likely made things worse, they're only one example of how fragmented policy has worsened Americans' health. Concepts fundamental to U.S. governance also proved problematic in the pandemic. In just one example, the U.S. Constitution makes public health the responsibility of individual states, creating a patchwork of different pandemic responses. Culture and environment also appear played a role. Americans are more likely than citizens of other countries to engage in what public health researchers consider risky behavior, such as gun ownership, smoking, consuming more calories, and exercising less. Polarized politics make it more difficult to implement guardrails on these behaviors. Floundering responses by federal, state, and local governments compounded existing issues and eventually allowed pandemic-related public health guidance to become political and cultural footballs. Less than two-thirds of Republicans have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine, compared with 91% of Democrats, according to the Kaiser Family Foundation's January 2022 vaccine tracking poll. The only thing both parties appear to agree on, according to the same poll, is how the pandemic has exhausted them. That has led to another riddle. As more and more pandemic prevention measures are dropped, Americans will be faced with how to live with a disease that can be chronic and disabling, even if it isn't as deadly. Death is not the only serious outcome from COVID, said David Petrino, the director of Rehabilitation Innovation for Mount Sinai Health System. Petrino has seen thousands of cases of so-called long COVID, where many varied and at times severe symptoms persist for months. A recent analysis by the Center for American Progress found the syndrome resulted in an estimated 1.2 million more disabled people in 2021. Shirley said, "We are addressing the acute illness and not resolving the issues that could prevent the illness in the first place."
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Yani.
Bazaar. Fire clay is basically mud, but a lighter, stickier type of mud with high alumina content. It's actually everywhere around us, but cannot be seen until it is uncovered from the earth. In its raw form, fire clay is found near or between layers of coal in coal mines. People have been extracting it from the ground for millennia to make bricks, ceramicware, tools homes, and a whole bunch of other things. Its qualities get even better when it's baked and stiffened. This clay has a great number of industrial uses and lasts nearly forever. Hello and welcome to another edition of Bazaar. This week we're going to venture through the vast world of fire clay and its byproducts. We will take a look at where it comes from and why it is so important to several industries that make our lives hum. We also want to understand just how this item fits into the bigger picture of the national economy. So let's start the show. Our quest for answers led us to a company that owns and manages at least five mines in Fars province. Esteghlal Abade Company specializes in the extraction of fire clay and the production of clay products. Fire clay is a refractory material that can withstand extremely high temperatures without losing its original properties. There are other types of refractories that this company also produces in small amounts, such as high alumina and melite ceramics.
but its main claim to fame is the production of highly useful fire clay. It might be interesting to know that this company is not just a mine owner. It also has three factories. These factories make products like fire brick, washroom items such as sinks, and industrial ceramics. Its production facilities can make large amounts of ceramic parts that are used in various fields such as blast furnaces for coke, iron, and steel productions. Because fire clay is heat-resistant, this material presents excellent qualities for outdoor flooring purposes. One of the benefits is it doesn't crack or expand when exposed to hot climates. That is why it is widely used across the country, particularly in central and southern regions where temperatures can often exceed 45 degrees Celsius. The quality of fire clay is assessed by its levels of impurities. This company can produce some of the highest-grade fire clays in the West Asian region with around 75% purity. In general, when the material is extracted, it is then transferred to the Research and Development Department where it is tested for quality. One of the competitive advantages of this company over similar firms in this field is the quality of its products that match international standards. This holding company has created dozens of direct job opportunities over the years, and hundreds more people are indirectly hired as well. Out of some 50 fire clay mines nationwide, this mine has been the only producer that extracts its products along the lines of exports. This company has faced many challenges over the years to enjoy its many achievements. Some are related to the fluctuation of domestic raw material prices. As part of its future vision, it has also overhauled production processes to optimize outputs. Besides the mine we just talked about, there is one other major fire clay deposit which is located in Charmahal Bakhtiari province. This mine offers 12 million tons of proven reserves, and it is set to produce some of the best quality refractories in the region. Each year, a combined average of 300,000 tons of fire clay are exported. Iran's tile and ceramic market have become very attractive with rapid socioeconomic development in the West Asian region. Also, there is an increasing need for new housing units in neighboring countries. There are some of the things that are driving Iran's export market in this field. So the country has stepped up its production to gain a larger share of the market. We looked at the latest figures from the Ministry of Industry to gain more insight into the productions in this field. Data showed that in the year 2020, roughly 400 million square meters of tile were produced in Iran. Such productions were estimated to be worth nearly $450 million. These productions were more than local needs, so nearly 160 million square meters of tiles were exported. Industry participants say that this sector is presently operating at only half of its total production capacity, adding that it has high export potential. With this in mind, the Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade is working with the government to find ways to expand its markets through production. The goal is to increase production levels by 300 million square meters over the next 4 years. Analysts estimate that this will generate an additional $2 billion in foreign revenues if the strategic sector taps into the full capabilities. Fire clay does not only feed the tile productions. It also supplies raw material to manufacturers of sanitary ceramic ware such as sinks. Iran currently makes copious amounts of these items. In fact, in the first half of last year alone, over 70,000 tons of sanitary ware were released into the market. Going off on information from the National Customs Administration, these items were mainly exported to neighboring countries. The country's light and heavy construction sector is booming with construction materials in high demands. It is worth noting that domestic raw materials, such as fire clay, meet 100% of Iran's construction needs. But you don't have to take my word for it. Here are some statistics on the construction materials market. Iran's steel, cement, tile, and ceramic industries produced more than twice the country's internal needs. Last year, exports of these items raked in some $10 billion in foreign revenues. Tile, glass, and ceramic exports composed some $3 billion of total exports. Steel exports accounted for the rest. That's all based on statistics from the Ministry of Industries, Mining and Trade. On another note, the country's mega mining and metal sector, which also supplies the construction sector, has grown by leaps and bounds in recent years. Industry participants say this was mainly due to the U.S. sanctions on the oil industry, which led to more focus on other sectors. Much of this expansion is in large part made possible by linking research institutions with manufacturers. This step was critical for sharing knowledge in collaborative product development. Catalysts are the unsung heroes of the chemical reactions that make human society tick by. They help speed up chemical processes between molecules that might have been taken years to interact. Factories rely on catalysts to make everything from plastic to drugs. Catalysts also help process petroleum and coal into liquid fuels and are key players in clean energy technologies as well. However, their biggest use happens in the oil and gas industries. This week, we're going to explore the expansive world of catalysts. We wanted to see who the major players in this field are and some of the applications of catalysts. Now, we will uncover how these tiny but mighty substances have made massive contributions to the national economy. It's going to be a fun one, so let's start the show. To familiarize ourselves with what catalysts are and where they are used, we visited a company specializing in making these items. Sarv Gas and Oil Company is a knowledge-based firm that has been active in this field for nearly two decades. This company makes a wide range of catalysts in 30 different types. Among its products, one can name catalysts used for the synthesis of formaldehyde, which is handy in the production of methanol. But that's not all. The products made here are extensively used to make raw materials with applications in numerous other production industries. Among its numerous achievements, this company has also obtained the know-how for making machinery and equipment necessary to complete various catalyst production chains. And that's not an easy task. A lot of hard work and science goes into making catalysts. That is why not all catalysts are created equal. Some are made with lower quality depending on the means and production methods, because catalysts are used to make other items through chemical processes. Having good quality catalyst is crucial in making high quality final products. This company serves two major roles: high-quality catalyst production and product development. As a knowledge-based company, the Research and Development Department holds the pulse of these activities. It has dedicated much of its resources to furnishing its department with the latest technology to get the job done. Knowledgeable experts run its Research and Development Department. Among its staff, this company employs engineers, scientists, researchers, and a whole host of other experts. Over the years, it has created hundreds of direct job opportunities as well. This company has overcome numerous obstacles to enjoy its many hard-earned achievements. One such challenge has been the U.S.-imposed sanctions. Some time ago, catalysts were placed on the U.S. sanctions list, so this company stepped up to the plate to fill in the market void, turning a challenge into an opportunity. With nearly 20 years of experience under its belt, this company has gained significant ground in the market. It is also known for being one of the first businesses to export catalysts. As part of its future vision, it wants to manufacture machines and catalysts that will complete various domestic chain productions. Additionally, it strives to make Iran self-sufficient in the field of catalysts. Catalysts are broadly used to make metals. Powerhouse industries like Iran's steel and iron sectors rely heavily on catalysts for their outputs. Products from these industries are vital to downstream manufacturing sectors such as construction materials, cables, home appliances, and automobiles, just to name a few. All of these sectors are part of the process of adding value to materials that generate higher profits as well. Companies like the one we just mentioned play a big role in providing catalyst to the steel and iron industry. Based on figures from the World Steel Association, Iran is the world's 10th biggest steel producer. Last year, crude steel production stood at 27 million tons. That's in contrast to the year 2019, when the country produced over 30 million tons. But despite the apparent decline, Iran's world standing remains unchanged. Meanwhile, the government has implemented several plans to increase production in this key sector over the years. Industry participants expect Iran to climb to 7th place among global top steel producers by 2024. There are 30 active steel producers in the country with high production capacities. These companies receive most of the iron they need through domestic sponge iron producers. It might be interesting to know that Iran is the biggest producer of sponge iron in the West Asian region. That's going off of a recent report by the Iranian Mines and Mining Industries and Renovation Organization. The report also says Iran is globally ranked second in its productions, closely rivaling India at the top. Figures show that in 2020, domestic sponge iron production stood at 30 million tons, while India's was around 33 million. As we mentioned earlier in the program, catalysts are necessary to make numerous items. That is why they are considered a strategic product. And in Iran, these pocket rockets play a significant role in the country's oil and petrochemical industry. Remarkably, without catalysts, Iran's thriving oil and gas industries would not thrive as they are today. According to figures from the Oil Ministry, the country exported petrochemical and petroleum products worth around $20 billion in 2020. That is twice the value of Iran's crude exports. While most of the world's last refinery output during the coronavirus pandemic, Iranian gasoline exports rose in the year 2020. Going off of figures from the National Oil, Gas, and Petrochemical Products Exporters Union, exports hovered at 8 million tons that year. These gasoline exports generated an estimated $3 billion. Iran's oil and gas industry is still going strong, and there are many investment opportunities in this sector and its downstream industries. All right, everyone, it's time for me to pass it over to my dear friend and colleague out there in the field who has prepared an interesting feature for you. Let's go check it out.
The foundation of knowledge-based companies is built on creating income from knowledge rather than natural resources. Firms involved in pharmaceuticals, health biotech, medical equipment, new materials, avionics, telecommunications, information technology, and software are considered to be in the knowledge-based industries. In this program, we are visiting a knowledge-based company that's involved in information technology. Most of the services that governments have to offer to people are in form of simple inquiries. In many of them, people have to make a payment. That includes bills, taxes, and whatnot. This company has managed to facilitate the process and design an online platform named Qabzino. The other group of services do not need payments. Those include checking your social security insurance records or your subsidy records. Such services are offered in another product named Pishkan 24, which is an online government services counter. The company is also planning to introduce a new product for car-related services to the market in the coming months. This company has managed to expand despite sanctions and other problems. Customer satisfaction has built their trust, and this has been a great incentive for the company to work harder to design new products. They also plan to enter the market and are looking for strategic partners abroad. Their goal is to attract domestic and foreign investment.
Without further ado, let's dive right into some news and trends regarding the mining and construction industry. As the young population in Iran matures, many of them are ready to purchase their first home. This has caused a housing shortage in the country. In response, the government has been pursuing a plan to build over 2 million affordable housing units nationwide. Presently, the government has secured land for this construction project, which is in its first phase. Earlier this month, the government put out a public call for the registration of people in need of housing. So far, around 2.3 million people have signed up for the program. Meanwhile, large domestic companies are also bidding to participate in the massive national project. The government created the National Housing Movement in response to an estimated 10 million housing unit deficit nationwide. The National Housing Movement will bolster construction and its related manufacturing sectors, but it has also gained the attention of Belgian companies who are keen to cooperate on this project. According to the Iran-Belgium Chamber of Commerce, these companies are active in the field of modern construction materials. They have shown interest in setting up factories in Iran for manufacturing building parts and will be bringing advanced technologies and investment as well. An official with the Chamber of Commerce explains that building parts will be manufactured off-site. Then, they will be transferred to projects and assembled into larger sections on-site. The official said, negotiations between Iran and Belgium regarding construction date back to 2008, but was never really followed up until this year. For our last bit of news, let's take a look at the mining sector. Iran has launched its first ever mining and mining industries innovation center in a bid to further expand the sector and develop the necessary technology. Several knowledge-based firms will be operating out of this center, and five startups have also joined. The goal is to acquire new technologies in the field of mining and geology. Officials expressed hope that this infrastructure will encourage research and innovation in this field. And there you have it. That covers our program for today. Thanks for joining us and see you next time for more exciting market and industry analysis on Bazaar.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.